It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. A lovely Monday, the 27th day of July, 2020, from an 80-degree fabulous Horn studio, we are off and running. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. And there, of course, is also located the chat room, the best means for augmenting your live listening pleasure, you know, when the program's live, Monday through Friday, 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between and around the great globe. Yes, indeed, if you jump into the chat room, you will be greeted by early arrivers. That would be Anatole and Otto and Squeaky. And capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky. Sorry, these things get posted in the chat room. There's a picture of Diamond and Silk, whom heretofore we have referred to as Paste and Polyester. But now, courtesy of Otto, who's just waiting for you to join in, Mold and Mildew. Sparky, even though he's a third stage guild navigator, he takes the hot summer months off from folding space. And probably for very good reason. Like I said, it's 80 degrees in here, so we've got some naked radio going on for this Moran Monday. Well, yes, we do. And every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude because, well, nothing's for sale here. There's no ads being pitched. No one's being asked to buy gold now. Nobody gets charged for access to the stream, the live program, any of the podcasts, none of that. And so, consequently, the program stays on the air because you are determined to keep it on the air. And we thank our partial sponsors of the program in this particular case. Thanks going out to our 27th day of the month subscribers. Robert in Australia, as well as the 26th and 25th. Thanks going out to Peter. To Andrea, thank you to James and Mark. Thank you all very kindly for being partial sponsors of the program and helping to keep non-profit, not-for-profit, non-capitalist radio on the air. Thank you, one and all. That means we come into this evening trying to finish off the last of Friday. There's $129 to go to finish last week, plus this week's. So that makes today's fundraising goal $329. And since July ends on Friday, that means we've got an uphill climb to finish the month in proper order. So $329 today, and that'll go a long way toward helping us finish the month. So if you want to be a new subscriber, Robert in Australia would love some 27th of the month company. You would go to headon.live, and the interface is right there on the main page. If you want to do Patreon, go to the Contribute tab. Technical note, you know, after the program, I always post the Podbean link on my Twitter account and on Facebook. I'm not sure what the status of the RSS feed is just yet, but please know you can always get those Podbean links there at on my Twitter timeline and on Facebook. As well, of course, as WhiteRoseSociety.org. But as long as the RSS feed is messed up from Podbean, that means nothing's going up to YouTube, etc. So that's just a sort of a, you know, housekeeping thing. Well, thank you very kindly. Ralphs has a $25 challenge on the table. Ralphs will double the first $25 that comes in. And thank you, Jeremy, for being first through the door to get things started today. Thank you very kindly. So $324, and if Ralphs' challenge is met, that'll take us down to $249. No. Yes. No. $274. Ciphering. What am I going to do? Anyway, that's the little housekeeping aspect of it. Just get the podcast either by going to, by finding it on my, or you can just search. You can just search at Podbean. They use the Podbean app and search it that way. Okay. And, of course, listening live via the head-on.live app is, of course, the easiest way to just get the stream. And there's a program streaming at all times 24/7. Let's see. Subject line, tear down that wall. Update coming from Brother Deacon Asa. I've updated the RSS feed. There's a lag. Headon.live/podcast seems to be updating fine. So the process is being corrected. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you. Tear down that wall. A note to begin this program. Upon entering the Hyatt Hotel in lovely Washington, PA on Friday night, I've never been to the Hyatt in Washington, PA, but been to Washington, PA plenty of times. That's the town that has the little college that served as the founding place. Well, not technically. That's up in Canonsburg. But Washington and Jefferson College is the alpha chapter of my old college fraternity. The fraternity itself was founded in Canonsburg, PA. But anyway, thank you, Timothy. Thank you very kindly, Tim. We are now started on Ralph's challenge, and there's $15 to go on that. Thank you. Thank you, Tim. Early cowbell, Billable Rick says, for Otto DeShot and the meme he found of mold and mildew. Yeah, I'd say so. Otto says he found that on Stephanie Miller's chat room early this morning. Back to Washington, PA. Upon entering the Hyatt Hotel in lovely Washington, PA on Friday night, Giraffe and I encountered a cracker security guard giving two young African-American girls a difficult time as they were trying to get some ice from the ice machine on the second floor. In order to access the second floor at this particular Hyatt, an electronic key card was necessary, similar to the key to enter a hotel room. Well, it was obvious that the girls, whose ages were approximately 7 or 8 and 13 or 14, respectively, and reminded me of the Obama children when he was in office, thought there was an ice machine on the first floor. The young ladies, upon realizing there was no ice machine on the first floor, turned to Uncle Cracker's security guard and asked where the ice machine was located. Well, the security guard, in a surly tone, "Are you staying in the hotel? Why don't you have a key card?" Having stayed at the hotel nearly 100 times over the last 3 years, Joey notes, I have watched many people assume there was ice on the first floor and witnessed that very same guard badge send white people up to the second floor and give them directions to the ice. However, this time the cracker security guard asked like ice, you know, the ice thugs, and rudely informed the young women that they would have to go to the front desk or have their parents escort them. Just then, Giraffery suggested that we invite the girls to come with us up to the third floor, where there is also an ice machine not far from our room. Giraffery said it was okay to escort the young underage girls because there are security cameras in the elevators, and Giraffery would know this because he's so tall that he often bumps his nose into the cameras. So as the Cracker security guard walked away, I whispered to them, "Come along, ride with Giraffery and me." Just then, Uncle Cracker started to harass the girls because they did not have a key card, and because, you know, we can't have these people walking around the hotel by themselves, you know, walking around while black. That was clearly the inference and implication that I took away from that encounter. I shot back with a vicious, menacing look at Uncle Cracker and yelled, "I got him." I was just waiting for him to say something because I was going to lay into him. He sheepishly turned and walked away. The younger little girl loved Giraffery, and Giraffery wagged his tail in appreciation. The older sister was understandably apprehensive, though, and had a suspicious, concerned look on her face, wondering why some white guy would want to help them. She was old enough to understand the terrible political landscape of the day. Giraffery sensed her fear and looked at me while whispering in my ear, "Tell her Black Lives Matter." So I did just that, and she smiled, and immediately the wall of fear came crumbling down. Giraffery and I had our own version of tear down that wall. The third floor ice machine was right by the elevator, and I told the ladies that they did not need a key card to return to the first floor. They were grateful and thanked me. Giraffery and I were thrilled to help them and hope those young girls realize that not all white people are racist, evil, and ice cold. This has been Joey's Journal for Monday, the 27th day of July, with Giraffery icing down his nose after bumping into the camera again. Okay. And that's a cowbell for the overall tenor of the note. And Giraffery, whom I've met, bumping his nose into the camera. Hopefully, as someone who has stayed there nearly 100 times and must therefore be a valued guest, hopefully you spoke to the management, Joey, and maybe helped that asshole security guard find a new line of work. I mean, seems like he shouldn't be in a position where he has to have contact with, you know, other human beings, if you get my drift. Yeah. And so that begins this Moran Monday, and it begins how. Oh, well played, Brother Deacon Asa. Wow, that security guard was such an ice hole. Mm-hmm. Yes, well played indeed. Now, it's Moran Monday. You know, Calliope music and... here, let's do this the right way, shall we? Do let's. It's more fun this way. Here we go.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Yes, yes, indeed. Right here, just a few steps off the Carnival Midway, the Moran Monday tent stands in all its cybernetic canvas glory. Indeed, 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 mere steps away from where only moments ago you were throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls in a vain attempt to take home a not-so-precious baby iguana. They're all waiting for you behind these cybernetic veils. Yes, indeed. Morans of all stripe. Earthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, birchers, baggers, booger eaters, libertardians, maggots, trumpansies, republicans of all kind, stripe, and nature. Yes, indeed. Now, remember, to enter the Moran Monday tent, support for the Moran Monday tent and all the other magnificent programming here on the Horn will set you back the cost of less than half a stick of chewing gum per program. That's how much a $10 a month subscriber to the Horn
gives up to keep independent, commercial-free, non-capitalist, progressive radio on the air here at the Horn. Less than a half a stick of gum. Cheap. Yes. Of course, the standard disclaimers apply. Upon entering the Moran Monday tent, patrons are advised to keep a close eye and a hand or two on wallets, purses, rings, bracelets, necklaces, earrings, jewelries, those little spikes that go in people's, the side of their noses, and I can't figure those out to save me. Because, well, you know, morans. And so necessarily you also want to keep a hand on that iguana that you won, children, pets, and even European-style messenger bags, because regardless of whatever it is, the Morans can get grabby. They'll steal everything but your tattoos. And that's only because they haven't figured out how to do that yet. They are, after all, Republicans. And if they can't fuck it or steal it, well, they'll destroy it. So, head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, you will. Where to begin? Well, let's begin with some Moranity. Right. Now this could be saved for prayer meeting Wednesday, but I don't think so. No. This is Moran business too. This has to do with Colorado. And a gospel sharp there by the name of Andrew Womack. And he's a religion hustler. And he's upset because Colorado's all liberal. But he's not, at least at one point in time, not particularly concerned about the Rona. He put up a Facebook post not long back, Andrew Womack did, in which he said, "I have respectfully refused to comply with the artificial limit on the number of people who can attend," talking about his church, because the state of Colorado invoked social distancing guidelines. We are firmly in the crosshairs. Firmly. I don't know how one can be firmly in crosshairs, but, well, the goddess of irony's on the job. We are firmly in the crosshairs of our liberal state government. Liberty Council, you remember Liberty Council, right? That's that grift that's run by Matt Staver. He provided the free lawyering for Sister Clerk Kim Davis there in Round County, Kentucky, that resulted in Sister Clerk Kim Davis spending some time in contempt in the Gray Bar Hotel. Mighty fine lawyering you get from that gospel grifter, Matt Staver at Liberty Council. We are firmly in the crosshairs of our liberal state government. Liberty Council has agreed to represent us, and we are fighting back. I believe it is not only our constitutional right. It's in the Constitution! It is not only our constitutional right, but our duty to stop, he said, duty, this extreme overreach of government that allows people to riot and pillage, but not assemble to worship the Lord. Yeah, I know. But then something happened. And this is reminiscent of what's her name, Patty Shively. You remember the special ed teacher from Oklahoma Stan who proudly voted for every Republican since Gerald Ford for president, had never cast a vote for a decent human being in her life, and suddenly has decided she's not a Trump voter anymore. Because now that she may have to go back into open classrooms, she realizes, as she said in her editorial in USA Today, that she may have, by voting for Trump, she may have signed her own death warrant. Yep, it was okay. Whoever else died, but when it touched her, suddenly she was capable of learning. Yeah. Well, you heard there what Andrew Womack there said of his limitations on crowd size inside his church and herpetological sanctuary. It is our duty to stop this extreme overreach of government that allows people to riot and pillage but not assemble to worship the Lord. Well, in between him writing that and now, health authorities in Colorado traced 22 cases of the Rona to his Summer Family Bible Conference. Andrew Womack. So where before he openly told the state government of Colorado to fuck off and held his super spreader events anyway, suddenly, like unto Saul of Tarsus of old, treading the flagstones of the road to Damascus, Andrew Womack, gospel sharp, has had a moment of revelation. Because there's an outbreak of COVID-19, and it all traces back to that summer Bible study camp ministry preaching session, dinner on the ground, whatever. 7 staff members and 15 attendees tested positive. Which means that they then would spread it elsewhere. Now, let's see. What does Colorado look like right now on the COVID Act Now map? Ah, yes, Colorado is at risk. And, in fact, they've got 9.2 daily cases per 100,000. Their infection rate is at 1.16 and rapidly increasing. And they've traced all of 20% of contacts in the state. And that's even with Jared Polis doing the best damn job he possibly can. But you got a lot of morons in that state, like Andrew Womack. Mm-hmm. And so it is that suddenly the light has gone on for Andrew Womack. And where he had planned for a healing conference where he was going to heal people. Now bear in mind, no limbs would be grown back. No nipped off ends of fingers regrown or anything that could actually, be empirically tested or demonstrated as a healing. No. But he's canceled his healing conference and explained himself thusly. I know it seems ironic that I'd be canceling a healing conference due to a sickness outbreak. If it was just me, I believe that if I touch someone, they'll catch my healing instead of me catching their sickness. But since the COVID-19 cases in this community have risen lately, and, as a direct result of his conduct, he doesn't say that, but it's true, I have to consider the safety and well-being of everyone involved. I know that God wants to heal COVID, just like every other disease. And he can do that no matter where you are. we ran that through the Horn Religious Gospel Sharp bullshit translator, and it came out, listen, I don't care if the rest of you fuckers get sick, but I don't want you spewing and LARPing and grabulating and smolicking all over me, because I don't want to get sick and die from this thing, because my whole hustle is a bunch of shit. And the last thing I want to do is spend my last days horizontally crucified on my belly with my arms spread out and a garden hose down my throat and a machine doing my breathing for me. So we'll be having a virtual healing service. We'll live stream it for you. I'll heal you via the interweb tubes. That's what I'll do. 'Cause it's about me, not you. Because, well, God is love, y'all. Mm-hmm. Do I remember Liberty Council? Scott in San Diego writes, I do, Bob. That was the antagonist in the 1962 classic Liberty, John Ford Western, that starred James Stewart, John Wayne, Vera Miles, Lee Marvin, Edmund O'Brien, Andy Devine, and Woody Strode. The film also inspired the Gene Pitney pop tune, The Man Who Shot Liberty Council, penned by Burt Bacharach and Hal David. All right, that was obscure and absurdist enough for a cowbell. Well done, Scott. Yes, interweb tubes. Stephen New York reminds us, remember, it's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Ralph's asking, why doesn't Andrew Womack move to Florida? Florida. Yeah, he could qualify as Florida man there. Right. Oh, and something else that Steve reminded me of. Here we are, living in the future. I mean, it's Monday, the 27th of July, here as I speak. But we're actually in the future. It's a strange twist or fold or dimple in the space-time continuum. But somehow or another, we do, it happens all the time here, manage to know what's going to happen before it does. Everything except the goddamned lottery numbers. Oh, well, never mind. So there we were, Friday on the front porch, talking, yakking, and someone, I think it was Steve in New York, said, really, does anybody think that Major League Baseball will even finish its season? And if I recall correctly, a conversation then took place about the idiocy of the designated runner on second in extra innings and how that puts the second baseman at greater risk as well as the designated runner. And then, lo and behold, today the news breaks that after their weekend series with the Phillies, a whole bunch of the Florida Marlins team, staff, trainers, and players, have tested positive for the Rona. And their next two games with Ballmer have been canceled. Oops. That didn't take long. But then, if you were listening to Friday's program, and you saw that news today, you probably responded as I just did. We knew it was going to happen. Then again, with a pandemic going on and something as dumb as trying to play baseball, it was kind of predictable. And then there's the head of coronavirus response for the Minnesota Vikings. The guy who is in charge of protecting the Minnesota Vikings from the Rona has tested positive for, you got it, the Rona. Not an auspicious beginning. Oof. So we'll see how that plays out. I was kind of surprised this morning as I was watching, I'd stayed with the next program that comes on after my filthy morning habit. And they had a stand-up from a reporter woman in Corinth, Mississippi. I think her name was Kate something. Didn't seem to be too terribly good at her job. Because she had been sent to Corinth, Mississippi, which she pronounced Corinth, as did Stephanie Rule, Corinth. She'd been sent to Corinth, and if you want to say it correctly like they do down there in Alcorn County, Mississippi, you say Corinth, Corinth. It's kind of actually a double stress syllable. Corinth, bang, bang, Corinth, Mississippi. Well, down there in Alcorn County, Mississippi, they done opened schools today. And so she conducted a socially distant interview with the superintendent of the Corinth schools, or the Alcorn County schools. I'm not quite sure how the school systems are set up in Mississippi. Probably as equally fucked up as Alabama, but never mind. And he talked about how, well, we got special air treatment machines, and we're going to social distance, and we're going to eat lunch at our desks, and we're going to have grab-and-go breakfasts, and we're going, and we ain't got a whole bunch of Roner here in Alcorn County in Corinth. And the reporter didn't ask a single difficult question. She didn't ask, sir, if one of the children gets the Rona, will you take responsibility for it? Nope. She didn't ask, sir, how do you propose to keep teachers and support staff from getting it? And will you shut down if it starts running around your school system? Nope. She was as useless as a screen door on a submarine. Because the bottom line is, that guy, by ordering children back into in-person schooling, that guy should probably be arrested and charged with child abuse and neglect and imprisoned, so that he can't hurt the children anymore. Jesus. And of course he's not going to. No, he's not going to say, listen, you know, the kids get sick, I'll quit my job. Mm-mm, no. I'm sure the lawyers are already working on the excuses for when it does start running through Alcorn County, Mississippi. Alcorn County has a relatively low rate of disease, but it very likely won't stay that way, especially now that they're compelling students and their families to potentially sacrifice themselves I guess for the political aims of the Colonel Governor Taint Reeves and of course the maggot in chief. Alcorn County, Mississippi has 274 confirmed cases and 3 dead. I dare suspect that number is about to rise. A good bit. One county to the east, in the county where I grew up in Alabama, they've gotten up to 918 cases and 9 dead. Here, just to give you an idea, here in West Virginia, we are at least going to demonstrate a modest amount of intelligence, and we're only going to have virtual schooling starting in September. And, or you've got at least a choice for virtual schooling, but only for one semester, only up to the, dead of winter, when things like flu will be running rampant. Gosh, Governor Jim, what an intellect. We're climbing here. We're at 117 cases and 5 dead in my county. And remember, even though those numbers are low, this is a state that cannot afford the cases that it even does. And I don't mean afford as in monetarily. We don't have the infrastructure. And if COVID cases begin to overtake our hospitals, that means that the everyday stuff that happens every day to beaten up, broke down hillbillies that usually keeps the hospitals busy, well, there won't be any room for them. But yeah, the kids are back in school in Alcorn County, Mississippi. And it's so infuriating. Because how do you express the depravity? How do you accurately describe the malignance of spirit required to throw children to the wolves? It's revolting. And of course, the CDC, bowing to pressure from nitwit Nero, has revised its school opening guidelines to make it easier for school districts to line up their children for slaughter. I saw an editorial cartoon of a teacher wearing a mask at her desk in a classroom. I can't recall if on the blackboard were the words person, woman, man, camera, TV. But she said, "All right, students, time's up. Put down your pencils and bring up your wills." Yeah. Let's check in San Francisco. It was this past Wednesday, about 3:30 in the afternoon, a bus driver asked a group of teens to put on their masks. And that proved to be, well, that was the opening event in a horrifying tableau for the bus driver. In the San Francisco Chronicle article, Roger Marenko, who is president of the Transport Workers Union Local 250, said they used a souvenir baseball bat, these kids did. And they broke his finger and bruised him up. They spit on him. All the while hollering anti-Asian racial slurs at the bus driver. Now, it's a stone-cold requirement for people getting on the bus, not just in San Francisco, but all over California. It's a requirement that they wear a mask. And when he asked them to wear a mask, they beat him with a ball bat.
Somebody tell Lee Greenwood.
There it is. And, yeah, our buddy John reminding me. I was trying to remember a trope from 2016. And John just reminded me by email. On last Friday's program, you were and this was in a conversation with Lou. On last Friday's program, you were trying to remember the bullshit trope the enablers of fascism in the for-profit media used to excuse the maggots' racism. Was that phrase, economic anxiety? Yes, that was exactly it. John saying, if so, I remember you used to use your reverb every time you said it. Those were the good old days when you used to refer to MLK legacy destroyer John Roberts as dead-eyed John Roberts. Wasn't that you? Anyway, good times. That was me on both counts. And that was exactly what I was trying to recall. So I don't know if Lou's on board right now, but that's what the for-profit media did all constantly. They would send alleged journalists into places like West Virginia with orders to ask stone-cold racists why they voted for, or to explain why stone-cold racists voted for Trump, and the excuse was economic anxiety. It's not nearly as fun without the reverb, I realize. But you have to admit the overall audio is considerably better. But that's the answer. And thank you, John. Thank you for reminding, because it bugged me all the way Saturday into Sunday, and then yesterday it hit me. Yeah, economic anxiety. When there wasn't a nickel's worth of economic anxiety, it was all they were motivated by his racism and the fact that he made it okay for them to be as racist as they always had been. Well, you know, we really are going to work on that, Jeremy, but we've got to do it at a time when I'm not on air, so we can get a really nice, clean recording of it. Jeremy says, you really need to get the rights to Scott's voice and have him record, "We're all screwed, Bob," and play it at least three times a show. We do. We absolutely do. I know, and as to the children in Alcorn County, Mississippi, going back to the abattoir, I mean school, Steve notes, if only them churins were feti. I don't know, Steve, it's fetuses. But yes, then those Republicans would care, or at least pretend to, right? And had a note from Ron and Raleigh saying, I'm sure you'll do it. I'm sure you're going to talk about Tom Cotton's latest example of tone-deaf racism. Necessary evil indeed. Because that is what Tom Cotton, ironically named, I mentioned this last week. He has introduced legislation to withhold school funding or make it just straight up illegal for any school to teach the New York Times 1619 Project. And that the 1619 Project... the New York Times, it was a brilliant piece of research and writing, trying to sort out, like I said, I think Friday, it was a sort of an attempt at a truth and reconciliation project relative to the history and origins of slavery in this country. The New York Times, for instance, says that 1776 is the official birth date of the United States, but the 1619 in the 1619 project refers to that year, 1619, the year that the first enslaved people were brought to this country, as our nation's birth year. And so, having proven himself a true son of the likes of Lester Maddox and George Wallace, Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton has gone on the attack against the 1619 project. And declared, the 1619 Project is a left-wing propaganda. It's revisionist history at its worst. This in an interview with the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Let's check in a little bit.
Senator, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm going to Jackson. Just like the song says.
Well, good. Good. Jackson, Tennessee.
Jackson, Tennessee. We just left Fort Campbell. Well, Clarksville.
Well, I'm writing about this 1619 project. Why did you introduce this legislation?
The New York Times should not be teaching American history to our kids, Frank. The 1619 Project is left-wing propaganda. It's revisionist history at its worst. Our country was not founded in 1619. It was founded in 1776. And it ought not get the benefit of federal tax dollars if local schools decide to use that kind of revisionist history in their curriculum.
Yeah.
See, this is one of the things that makes this business so despicable. This bill's not going to pass. But it has gotten enough notice that it will scare school districts away from teaching the actual history of our brutal and bloody generations of slavery. It's much like, what was it called? Couple of years back, the educational reform that sought to actually educate children, and right-wingers lost their minds over it. What was the name of that one? Common Core? Was that it? Something like that? And so, without even knowing what it was about, your garden variety birthers, deathers, birchers, libertarians, you know, what have you, and this is pre-Trump, had a shit hemorrhage.
Jesus!
Common Core, yes, okay, thanks, Steve. And so by throwing this hissy on a bill that's never going to get passed, what he's trying to make sure, what Tom Cotton is, the ironically named Tom Cotton, Steve noting the goddess doesn't sleep. What he's trying to do is, this is dog foghorning, not dog whistling. Don't want our schools teaching about the shitty things we did for the last 400 years. It's called the Saving American History Act of 2020. I don't think that could have been titled any more Orwellianly had they actually tried. The Saha of 2020. What he means is saving white supremacist history. The Times is pushing back, and you know it's you have to be able to separate people like Maggie Haberman, White House stenographer and pursuer of access and practitioner of the worst form of access journalism, from the more noteworthy and noble efforts of the Times. Times spokesman Jordan Cohen said the 1619 Project, quote, is based in part on decades of recent scholarship by leading historians of early America that has profoundly expanded our sense of the colonial and revolutionary period. Much of this scholarship has focused on the central role that slavery played in the nation's founding. Now, I don't know if it's included in there, but the fact that George Washington, for instance, was famous for his beer. But George Washington never brewed a drop. George Washington should be known as famous for the beer his slaves made. There's even an old recipe for pie. George, with his imperfect dentition, remember, among the sets of false teeth that George Washington had was a set made with the teeth of actual slaves. But apparently he didn't speak really clearly part of the time. And there's a legend that comes down to us of his slave cook coming in and asking old Marse George what he wanted for dessert, and he said, just pie. Only he apparently had a thick Virginia accent. And his poor cook went away thinking that he had requested chess, C-H-E-S-S, chess pie. And so, being a brilliant and remarkable cook, went back to the kitchen, having no idea, no recipe, no nothing, never heard of chess pie, came up with it, served it. It was a huge hit, and has come down to us in lore, and it's rich and creamy and custardy, and more than a slice will just do you in. Sweet, oh my God, as chess pie. And so you'll still see it today, lemon chess pie, for instance. And if the story is anything remotely resembling true, then the genius of that culinary genius is something to be marveled at and beheld. But Tom Cotton, Moran, Tom Cotton wants a more of an American history of oldest sun shines bright on my old Kentucky home. And we won't be talking about old Marse going down to the quarters late at night with a belly full of the local mash or anything like that and raping the daylights out of his female slaves. And right. Because remember, and again, this is more of that American history that Tom Cotton doesn't want taught. Remember, Thomas Jefferson's wife, whose name was Randolph, last name was Randolph, Thomas Jefferson's wife was half-sister to Sally Hemings, who, after his wife died, Martha Randolph, a lot of Marthas back then, biblical name and all. But after Jefferson's wife died, well, old Marse Tom took to raping the daylights out of Martha's half-sister, because old Marse Randolph couldn't stay out of the quarters. And so it is that the only living direct relatives of Thomas Jefferson, I'm not talking like, you know, descendants of his sister or whatever. I'm talking about the people who spring, the only people who spring directly from the loins of Thomas Jefferson forward. Well, no, there are some white ones. I take that back. There are, because there's reference to him playing with his grandchildren in his old age, and he would not have been playing with the slave children because they were his grandchildren too. It might be true that a majority of Thomas Jefferson's direct descendants are black and were conceived in rape. But again, Tom Cotton of Arkansas says, that's revisionist history. But it got worse. It always gets worse.
Any idea how much money we're talking about if this funding was taken away?
It won't be much money, Frank, because it's not all money. It's simply the proportional share of what schools might use in their history curriculum. But even a penny is too much to go to the 1619 Project in our public schools. The New York Times should not be teaching American history to our kids.
No, our churches should be teaching American history to our kids. And the Grand Kleagles and Exalted Pishposhes and Noble Lumpkins and Grand Cyclopses and Demigod Dragons and the Ladies Auxiliary of the Ku Klux Klan and the Concerned White Citizens Councils should be teaching American history. You know what we ought to be doing? We ought to have a school funding program that'll make sure that every year, every American school child gets to watch that Hollywood classic, D.W. Griffith's Birth of a Nation. And maybe there could be a learning package to go with it that would let ninth graders read the book from which that movie was made. A famous book, sold lots of copies, called The Klansman, in which the Klansman is the hero. That's how we need to be teaching American history, not the New York Times.
Curriculum, though, hasn't that traditionally been a matter for local control, not for federal intervention?
Curriculum is a matter for local decisions. And if local left-wing school boards want to fill their children's head with anti-American rot.
History is now anti-American rot. Teaching what we actually did is now anti-American rot. Old Tom Cotton just wants to, I don't know, bury his head in the cotton patch and stick his fingers in his ears and say, la, 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 I can't hear no history. I wonder if it's anti-American rot, and of course, this is, you're not going to get any of this with this interview with Tom Cotton. Say, Tom, did you know that building you work in, the United States Capitol, was built by people whose labor was stolen from them, and every stone there, it was laid with the blood, sweat, and tears of slaves? Did you know that, Tom? Well, that's anti-American rot. It's a pity that I'd really meant to put this before Dr. Bill. It's a pity that I don't have him on to here right now to help with this. But well, that's how it goes. I'll try to remember. For tomorrow, maybe get his input on it. Yeah, I know. I know. Just had a tweet from Trey. Where in the fuck are all these left-wing school boards? Well, you know, they're the ones that teach American history out of, you know, a people's history of the United States. You know, first grade. Yeah. The irony of all of this, though, is that Dr. Bill actually spent years trying to teach teachers in West Virginia how to teach history, you know, from the actual documents, which is what Nicole Hannah Jones at the Times, who got the Pulitzer Prize for commentary this year, and invented the 1619 Project. That's exactly what she did. But now this thing's going to be turned into a white-wing talking point, and I'm sure it's already being blared all over the place by, you know, Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground, and Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, and, well, they're erasing our white history, trying to make it like as how them the slaves did everything that was good and decent in America. Well, if you are in the South and there is a building that is over 160 years old, the odds are way better than even that that was not built by white labor. Because it was the reason you get those buildings all over the South is because labor was not part of the cost at all. Billable Rick says, Tom Cotton doth protest too much. He is anti-American rot. I could not agree more. And he is a demagogue of the worst sort. Billable Rick continues and asks, who does Tom Cotton think should be in charge of teaching American history to children? The Disney Channel? The Disney Company? That would be, wait for it, fucking Goofy. Well played. Stephen New York says, you done forget it, brother Grand Poobah History Master David Barton. Oh, yes, the wall builder. The man whose book was so full of lies that his Christian publisher wouldn't even publish it. And with a good question, Steve asks, why is it that these people are afraid to just learn different perspectives? When I grew up, elementary school, middle school, or high school, I was never afraid to learn different perspectives. I never had anyone in family or school express such fear of knowing or learning. Well, Steve, you didn't grow up below the behind the cornpone curtain. There was, for instance, only one interpretation of Reconstruction, and that was when the scalawags came south and the carpetbaggers and took advantage of poor freedmen tried to give them power that they would then use for themselves to the deep and abiding harm of the old South. But Tom Cotton's not done being stupid yet, so let's continue. Oh, by the way, we still got $15 to go on Ralph's challenge. That would take us down to $274. And if we can not go into tomorrow with a great big whopping hole, that would be tremendous.
They're a regrettable choice. But they ought not to benefit from federal tax dollars to teach America's children in America.
To teach America's children to hate America. I'm sorry, what was that?
Yeah, boy, I tell you what, this is some kind of hard-hitting interview, isn't it?
Nothing, it's just other folks in the car.
Oh, okay. And you've referred to this as racially divisive.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. You've referred to it, the project as racially divisive. Could you talk about that?
So the entire premise of the New York Times factually and historically flawed 1619 Project, which even liberal history professors of all people have criticized as inaccurate and poorly written, is that America is at root a systemically racist country.
Well, anybody want to field that one? You know, because we are, we were, we have been, all kinds of different verb tenses there. Inherently and systemically racist. I mean, that sort of explains the relationship with the people who'd been here for 13,000 years before the white folks got here, doesn't it? And remembering, of course, that the idea of race is a white European colonialist invention.
The core and irredeemable. I reject that root branch. America is a great and noble country. Founded on the proposition that all mankind is created equal.
Nah, dumbass Tom, it doesn't say that. You're a textualist, motherfucker. It says all men are created equal. It says that in the Declaration of Independence. It doesn't say all mankind. It doesn't say all humankind. And on July 4th, 1776, there was no notion out there that women ought to vote. And in point of fact, when the Constitution comes around in 1787... hell, every mankind doesn't get to vote. Only the property owners. And guess what? In the South, owning just one slave could confer enough value in terms of property to grant you the vote. What a moron he is. But then again, more and Monday.
We have always struggled to live up to that promise, but no country has ever done more to achieve it.
What would you say to folks that say fighting to preserve Confederate statues, names on bases and stuff, that's racially divisive as well?
Ooh, that's a little bit of a hard question.
I have no problem with people debating that in a constructive, reasoned, deliberate fashion.
Tone police.
We've done that in Arkansas. Our legislature chose to remove the statues of two Arkansans when segregation has passed. They passed a law to do so. That process is underway. What I can't tolerate, no one should tolerate, are angry mobs tearing down statues of anyone. You know, they tear down a statue of Robert Lee today, and tomorrow they come for Washington and Lincoln and for Grant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Here's a little thought experiment. Let's put up a statue of William Tecumseh Sherman in Charleston, South Carolina, Savannah, Georgia, Columbia, South Carolina, Atlanta, Georgia, Jackson, Mississippi, Montgomery, Alabama. Let's see how long before angry white mobs tear those statues down. But then, of course, Tom Cotton would say that, well, that's understandable. Okay, not Sherman. What do you say? In front of whichever Senate office building has Tom Cotton's office in it. what do you say we put up a statue of Adolf Hitler? Would it be okay if angry mobs tore that down, Tom? Head full of cotton balls? Billable Rick noting, the white privilege just oozes from Tom Cotton's being. Is he as white as his name applies? Person, man, woman, camera, TV. I rest my case. Meanwhile, Silent R. Lamar says, newsflash to Tom Cottonballs. Bob, you must understand people. Some people are scared of the truth, and because I've heard that the truth hurts. It is a painful truth. It's a brutal truth. It's a brutal reality. But ignoring it doesn't make it less brutal or less real. It just means that you're that whatever your chronological age, you are intellectually and emotionally an infant. Megan asking, what's next? That America never did slavery? That the framers fought against it? That the Native Americans voluntarily gave up their land to make room for white folks? Jesus, fuck these people. That's not what's next. That's what's already happened. Megan, do you remember the story of the Texas school book case? The Texas history text that referred to slaves as workers who came to America to work? Yeah. Steve in New York says, Tom Cotton, let's take note here. As disgusting as Tom Cotton is, he is an intelligent and infinitely more dangerous Trump. A more intelligent and infinitely more dangerous Trump. That's exact. And he's the one, exactly, Steve. He's one of the ones that I think about when I note that one of the greatest risks of this Trump presidency is that there are people out there who could do what he dreams of doing and be intelligent and competent enough to do it. Tom Cotton's one of those. And he's got that kind of ambition. Another one like that is that new and different kind of Republican, Ben Sasse of Nebraska. Ron in Raleigh says, you remember a few years back when Governor Mitch Daniels wanted to ban Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States for similar reasons to old Tommy Boys? History's a bitch if you're a white man trying to cover up the stench of your bullshit. And I don't know why history is so dangerous for these kinds of people, the Tom Cottons and the Mitch Daniels of the world. It's not about hating America. Everything that they do hates America. Fucking working people every day of your life, giving away the national treasury to billionaires to the tune of $1 trillion is hating America. They despise the idea of America with every breath they take. What this threatens is their privilege, their power, and their position. And Tom Cotton's is another one of those death yawps of the woolly mammoth caught in the tar pit. Sinking, sinking, knowing that the end is coming, and trumpeting its anguish to an uncaring world. Because Tom Cotton knows how vicious this country has been to minorities, to people unempowered. He knows. He knows damn good and well. and he is scared to death that one of these days someone is going to respond to the likes of him the way the likes of his did theirs. And the idea that he's blathering this bullshit at a time when we're laying to rest one of the greatest civil rights heroes this country has ever produced in John Lewis is nausea-inducing. Asked today, as he fled to North Carolina, whether he would be paying his respects to Representative Lewis as he lays in state in the Capitol Rotunda.
No, I won't be going. No.
Because, well, Donald Trump, the son of a Klansman, is racist to the bone. And there we go. David in South Carolina, Stan pointing out. Harvard Cotton, another Harvard grad. And remember, Harvard, which has the largest endowment of any institution of higher learning in the world, built that endowment with money derived. That's right, of course, from slavery. Yeah. At David in South Carolina, Stan reminds us, remember, Democrats and Black Lives Matter are going to tear down Christ the Redeemer statue in Rio de Janeiro, which is in Brazil, which is not part of the United States. None of these people have ever been in the Democratic Party. In USA, there's no organized political organization known as the Left. There's no organized group called Antifa. If you have spent any time at all with the Democratic Party, you know good and well that the Democratic Party could not have created a virus and organized a pandemic just to make DT look bad. No, the Democratic Party has a hard enough time organizing itself into something resembling a party. Yet racially divisive is teaching the truth about racism, says Steve in New York. Precisely. My name is Bill on Capitol Hill. Scott writes, I'm a little surprised, Bob. Have people stopped dying from COVID-19 and I missed the headline? Old Massa Cotton's stupid 1619 bill is entirely wrong, but perfectly understandable. Instead, he and every other Democratic and Republican senator or House member need to be laser-focused on every effort possible to address COVID-19 and its impact on kids and everybody else. But then, who the hell am I fooling, Bob? Cotton's hateful, ignorant efforts spring from the same mindset as those of an earlier era. That's what, yeah, and I'll add editorially that that's why I refer to him as the natural, proud son of George Wallace and Lester Maddox. I'm certainly old enough, Scott continues, to remember when they wouldn't allocate a single Roosevelt dime for black studies courses in public colleges and even some high schools. 99 days, people. 99 days. We must add to our numbers in the House, retake control of the Senate, send Trump packing. If we don't, we're all screwed, Bob. That we are. Silent R. Lamar says, okay, Bob, slaves came here to work. Okay, someone should ask the person who thinks this is how did the blacks navigate the ocean with a two-person max dinghy? I'd like to know how a landlocked group of people managed a great water body. I don't remember Egypt having a fleet of ships. Well, I mean, Egypt wasn't landlocked, Silent R, and they did have a fleet of ships, but that's Egypt. There certainly weren't any fleets going out from West Africa. And by the way, when those Democrats and BLM activists go to pull down Christ the Redeemer, Flavio would like us all to know that Christ the Redeemer weighs 650 metric tons. Good luck moving it. Well, it's all a matter of physics. When I mentioned a Hitler statue in front of Cotton's building in Washington, D.C., An actual problem regarding the Holocaust is that few Americans are aware of the history. Do you think statues would help? I think teaching history would help. Yeah. Let's put. What if we put a statue of Tom Cotton in a Nazi uniform? Ooh, including the little Charlie Chaplin mustache for him. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And do you have any sense for why the New York Times is taking an anti-American approach, in your view?
I mean, the New York Times is become a national laughingstock. They're like a social justice seminar ever since they repudiated the op-ed from me that they solicited.
Aha! And there's your answer. He sent an op-ed that you may recall, Tom Cotton did, urging the military to gun down Black Lives Matter protesters. It caused an outrage because it was an outrageous statement that Tom Cotton, racist, made. Yeah. And now he's butthurt about it because he got caught and called out for being the racist that he is.
That's fine.
Yeah.
And I think, unfortunately, every year that goes by, it's just one more graduating class that had their heads filled with this nonsense.
Yeah.
About microaggressions and safe spaces and trigger warnings, as opposed to being taught in school what they shouldn't need.
And that's to lift themselves up by their own damn bootstraps, even if they ain't got no boots.
The world, which is to be able to tolerate opinions with which they disagree,
yeah,
express their disagreement, and have reasoned dialogue with their fellow citizens.
And I take it you believe that slavery is an important part of America.
Boy, Frank there's really working hard to rehabilitate old Tom, isn't he?
American history. I mean, you don't dispute that part.
We have to study the history of slavery and its relevant impacts.
You might want to get the hockey puck for this.
On the development of our country, because otherwise we can't understand our country. As the Founding Fathers said, it was the necessary evil upon which the Union was built, but the Union was built in a way, as Lincoln said, to put slavery on the course to its ultimate extinction.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
No. No, it wasn't on a course to its natural extinction. All Tom head full of cotton would have to do is read the ordinances of secession of places like South Carolina and Mississippi and Alabama to find them saying that that slavery was the cornerstone upon which the Confederacy was founded and that it was never going away. There were no discussions about the natural extinction of slavery because there was an actual ban in the Congress of any discussion of the abolition of slavery. Former President John Quincy Adams, the only president ever to return to the Congress, was censured and muzzled for trying to bring up the issue of slavery. Tom Cotton is a liar. Tom Cotton is an abuser of facts. The interviewer is somebody. Trey wants to know. The interviewer is somebody from the Arkansas Democrat Gazette named Frank, who should probably find a different line of work. Or then again, journalistic fluffing is a line of work, I guess. a necessary evil. You know, the people who said that during the debate over the Declaration of Independence and during the debate over the Constitution, the people who said that were slavers. By the time 1861 rolls around, well, part of the reason that the South wound up getting its ass beat when the Union finally took its other hand out from behind its back was because the North had largely grown an economy, a capitalist economy, that did not rely on directly stolen labor. It relied on shitty wages, but it was able to industrialize, whereas the South, relying upon slavery, did not dare engage in industrialization on such a level because they were terrified. No matter how many gay barbecues they had down at 12 Oaks, the entire history of the antebellum South is one of whistling past a graveyard, because they lived in constant fear. And the only way they were able to maintain their lifestyle was by dint of brutal acts of repression and suppression. You know what? There's never a bad time for a Bullwinkle reference. Randy in PA says, Omar was a rich West African country, thus the ruby yacht of Omar Khayyam, with apologies to Rocky and Bullwinkle. Yes. Very good. Very good indeed. Speaking of statues, Darlene in Connecticut says, I thought it was fascinating and poignant that Representative John Lewis's motorcade stopped at the MLK Memorial for a few minutes today. A nice and very conscientious touch by Representative Lewis's family. I feel bad for the Navy officer pallbearer who collapsed, I assume from the heat, in front of the Capitol. None of the other military pallbearers moved an inch from their positions. They had to stand firm. I guess it was Secret Service officers that ran over to his aid, and I hope he's okay. I can only imagine he is upset not to have seen the ceremony through, as he was a black officer. They did not replace him. His spot remained empty. The ceremonies which attended Representative Lewis's passing, especially yesterday, as his casket was carried by a horse-drawn caisson across the Edmund Pettus Bridge and to the church there in Selma, I've been there, where it all began, was one of the most moving I've seen. The road across the Edmund Pettus Bridge was strewn with rose petals. Of course, if you mention the beatings that John Lewis took, I'm sure that would be left-wing lies, according to Tom Cotton. The only reason he was beaten on Bloody Sunday was because he had very obviously jaywalked across that bridge. We can't have that kind of lawlessness in America. Fuck Tom Cotton. With a white, and I do mean white, hot poker. Yeah, what's that? Okay, Mr. Spicoli.
You dick!
No, Tom. Mm-hmm. So we've reached the halfway point of this Moran Monday with probably too much time dedicated to the moron that is Tom Cotton. But you can't let that shit slide. And Ron and Raleigh was right in that regard. It was in the stack here, and no, it wasn't going to get away from me. Even Joe Scarborough had a hissy. Saying, the guy went to Harvard Law School. Well, we've long since established that going to Harvard Law School is not what it once was. The guy went to Harvard Law School. He knows how to draft a sentence. He wrote, as the founding fathers said, slavery was the necessary evil upon which the Union was built. We can all read English. He tried blaming that on the media, blame it on himself or whoever drafted that. But these sorts of quotes not only damaged Donald Trump and Republican senators with black voters, with Latino voters, with Asian American voters, it of course damages Donald Trump's prospects of ever winning back white suburban voters in the suburbs of Philly and Macomb County, Michigan, in the suburbs of Milwaukee, the suburbs of Pittsburgh. This blatant racism is devastating and self-defeating not only to Donald Trump's election chances, but also to a lot of Republican senators in Arizona, in North Carolina. And what matters in the modern era is who gets their voters out. And the only hope that this country has was best enunciated, as much as it galls me to say it, Charlie Sykes, founder of Bulwark, Republican, never Trump Republican, he said, let's leave aside the question of whether the deaths of nearly 150,000 Americans can be considered a lethal consequence of backing Trump. Matt Lewis, who had argued that, yeah, we need to get rid of Trump, but you know, we got to keep the Senate and take back the House. Well, Charlie Sykes didn't like that worth a damn and said Lewis is among the anti-Trump critics, now warning against punishing the GOP too severely for its cowardice, lack of character, and submission to Trumpism. Sykes continued, can you defeat Trumpism by defeating Trump but leaving his bootlickers in power? The transactional nature of the Senate GOP's groveling surrender to Trump is straightforward. Simply ignore his awfulness and you'll get things you want. That bargain required ignoring an ever-growing pile of awfulness. At some point, the ignorance morphed into rationalization and ultimately active collaboration. And then he spoke their names, or wrote their names. Lindsey Graham, Kelly Loeffler, John Cornyn, Martha McSally, Tom Tillis, Mitch McConnell, Cory Gardner, Marsha Blackburn, Joni Ernst. Wait. Where the hell is Susan Collins? But then he came to bury them, not to praise them. Some have simply fallen silent while others have turned themselves into low-rent internet trolls. They've squandered their credibility. Only the profoundly naive can imagine a John Cornyn making a credible case against executive overreach, or Kelly Loeffler for ethics and government, or Lindsey Graham defending the rule of law. Which Senate Republican would not be laughed off the stage if he or she attempted to warn now against the dangers of an exploding national debt? If the GOP does not somehow renew itself by purging the foul air of its current corruption, it will find itself in the wilderness for the next 40 years as it tries to explain its history of Vichy Trumpism. Well, here's the thing. The Republican bench doesn't have any so-called decent, rational Republicans on it. like the turtles underneath the elephant standing on its back. It's turtles all the way down. It's maggots all the way down in the Republican Party. Plain and simple. Sykes writing, as for the rest of them, burn it all down. But right there you have it. Of course, there may not be a Republican Party in 40 years. Remember, and this is kind of my little political theory, when one political party collapses, the space it occupied is filled by its nearest philosophical kin. And just as what came after the PLO, as Israel learned to its horror, having spent decades trying to destroy the PLO, what filled the vacuum left by the PLO's collapse was, at least to the Israelis, infinitely worse than the PLO. Well, the same applies here. If the Republican Party collapses, and if they are driven from power, and if they are silenced, whatever remains and whatever fills that vacuum will, guaranteed, be even nastier. Because it has to be. It's just how things work. And the only hope against that is to destroy them, grind them into the dirt, plow the earth, and salt it, so that maggotry and republicanism can never grow again. Because again, Donald Trump is not the problem. Donald Trump is not the disease. Donald Trump is the symptom of the disease that has plagued this country, God, since Barry Goldwater was blithering about using nuclear weapons. It is the disease that has afflicted this country since Dwight Eisenhower shrieked that letting everybody go to the doctor when they're sick would reduce the United States to communism. It is the disease that allowed a corrupt newspaper man named Warren Gamaliel Harding to enter the presidency, drop dead, be replaced by a priggish asshole named Calvin Coolidge, who then gave way to Herbert Hoover. And all three presided over a massive drunken financial orgy that resulted in the horror that we know as the Great Depression. And the only times that we've had any respite from them is when the presidency, the Supreme Court, and both houses of Congress were in democratic control. As I've noted before, one of the best examples of this is the National Labor Relations Act. You only get that with FDR's ascendancy and a Democratic majority in House and Senate. And then lo and behold, after the time that the Republicans spent in the wilderness, when they were returned to power, Congress in 1948 and the presidency in 1952, 53 actually. One of the first things they did was to start gutting the NLRA via that most hateful and noxious piece of legislation known as Taft-Hartley. That seems obvious to me via history. I hate to hammer on it, but we badly do need to meet Ralph's challenge. There's $15 to go on that. It would be wonderful if we could. And then maybe please finish off last Friday so that we can get started on finishing July so we can have a horn in August. David in South Carolina stands absolutely right. Donald Trump is not capable of writing this script. Hell no. This script was written long ago by people like Lewis Powell before he was installed on the Supreme Court by a grateful Republican president. You're right, Jeremy, in Vermont says. See Al-Qaeda and ISIS in its wake. Yep. That's always a problem because the American electorate, David in South Carolina stand pointing out the danger of taking the House, Senate, White House is that people will be impatient to have all problems solved and will put the GOP back in office for midterms. I understand that, David, but I also think that that's also a function of having a capable communicator in the White House. We've got to get Joe Biden into office and get hold of the House and the Senate. And then Biden has to communicate how much hard work there is to be done. Yeah, I'm sure none of his nor his minions are listening. But the fact of the matter is, the first thing you have to communicate, or one of the first things, is that this is not the work of one term. It's not even the work of one president. It may not be the work of one generation. The damage done has been going on in its most recent incarnation since January the 20th, 1981. Now, that's 39 years ago. On January 20th, 2021, it'll be 40 years ago. That's a generation. And realistically, the harm of one generation can take two or three to fix. The South surrendered at Appomattox. The war is still not over. We had best learn from that. Thank you, Anatole. Anatole just jumped in. We're $5 from finishing Ralph's challenge, at which point we will be $74 from finishing last week. Thank you, Anatole. And I guess I understand why. I don't like understanding why, but I do. David in South Carolina stand pointing out Lindsey Graham is, as of his emailing, up by two against Jamie Harrison. Jesus. And by the way, the news over the weekend was all full of, oh, we're very close. The massive human trials are starting on a hoped for vaccine. Please pay attention to both of the magician's hands and not just one. This is the setup for an October surprise. Recall that over the weekend, COVID Caligula tweeted that
I won't be throwing out the first pitch at the Yankees game on August 15th at Yankee Stadium because I'm so focused on the vaccine for the China virus.
The information, well, you know, the X-Files, the truth is out there. The truth is out there. And it's a matter of being open to it and aware of it. Jeremy in Vermont says, old 666. Don't remind me, Bob. 666 was elected a month before I was born, entered office a month after I was born, and didn't stop doing his personal damage until I was 8. Hell of a time to begin life, Jeremy. He was inaugurated the second semester of my senior year in high school. And down in Alabama, all those middle-class white folks were so happy. You see, just the previous August, he'd told them what it was going to be like to have him as president when he did his first big campaign speech after the nomination at the Neshoba County Fairgrounds in Philadelphia, Mississippi, where Schwarmer, Goodman, and Cheney were murdered by the Klan, and it was a states' rights speech. And nothing gets white conservatives, white Southern conservatives, all tingly in their no-no place, like dog whistling them some states' rights. Thank you, Roberto. Thank you very kindly. Ralph's challenge has been met, and we have $54 now to go to finish last week. Thank you very kindly indeed. Who's to say, Megan asks, COVID Caligula isn't already sitting on a vaccine and is planning on presenting it right before the election? Oh, I think that's entirely likely. But I've said that. You know, it's like the story about the people getting experimental vaccines, oligarchs and whatnot in Russia that we talked about last Tuesday. And then I read about something over the weekend, therapeutic plasma treatments. There are bizarre things happening with Nitwit Nero's health. I don't know if you saw the photograph memorializing that tone-deaf moment when former Green Bay Packers quarterback Brett Favre decided to go golfing with Julius Geezer. But standing there for a quick photograph with him,
you know, giving the thumbs up,
he's wearing his trademark white polo shirt with it sweat plastered against his 52 Bs. And I'm not kidding, and I'm not trying to be prurient, but it looks like he's leaking from the nipples. And the funny thing is, there are medical conditions, and there are drugs, which can cause that to happen in men. It's obvious he's got a whopping case of gynecomastia, probably brought on by the drug that he uses for hair loss, because that hair loss drug was originally prescribed as a means of holding at bay something that occurs in men called BPH, benign prostate hyperplasia. That means non-cancerous swelling of the prostate that makes urination a misery. And there's a killing blow to the dinner hour in the Central Daylight Time Zone. Sorry about that. But I'm convinced he's getting some sort of drug therapy. Because now we find out today that his national security advisor, Robert O'Brien, trying to remember which, national security advisor has the Rona. He's tested positive. For Bloomberg News, Jennifer Jacobs reporting, Robert O'Brien has tested positive. And that adds Robert O'Brien to Council of Economic Advisors Acting Chairman Thomas Phillipson, Trader Tot's girlfriend Kimberly Guilfoyle, various service staff, all of whom interact with Nitwit Nero, and yet somehow he doesn't catch it, and it's not because of his good genes. No. Oh, well, okay. Dinner's definitely over in the Central Daylight Time Zone now. Megan with a note. So Trump's lactating now? Well, he's got to feed Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham somehow. Yeah. You. Subject line, Portland. Mike in Cascadia and Jude were both there over the weekend. Jeremy says, a few other hornies and I were watching live streams from Portland over the last three nights. It should be no surprise that it was mostly peaceful, other than a few people yelling swear words up until the point when the little green goons started shooting pepper balls, CO canisters, and targeting the media. All three nights broke down after that. Oh, this is... It's so transparently obvious what's going on. They're trying to provoke a response. They're trying to provoke actual gunfire. Trump throwing out the first pitch. Lee in New York says, first, Trump will need help ascending the pitcher's mound. Second, he cannot throw hard enough to get it to roll all the way to home plate. Third, Dr. Fauci already threw a first pitch. Blubbering blob could not stand the comparison. Also, isn't there going to be a tops card for Fauci? I doubt there's one for Trump.
I hate him.
And now Dr. Fauci's family has a security detail because after the onslaught against him by the White House and by Trump, he's been receiving an onslaught of death threats. Oh, Jesus. Hate to hear it. David in South Carolina stands says, my 21-year-old niece has COVID. She works in a grocery store, mild symptoms so far. However, she lost a kidney as a young child and is thus compromised. Please send healing vibes this way. Thanks. Oh, with all our might, David, with all our might. And it, every time I see one of these, I'm reminded, it does not have to be this way. In fact, I read a thread over the weekend on Twitter that shows comparison graphs from around the world. Virtually every other country is flattening the curve. Just not us. There it is. Andy Slavitt, who is a former Obama healthcare aide, wrote a lengthy thread. He said, "We can virtually eliminate the virus anytime we decide to. We can be back to a reasonably normal existence, schools, travel, job growth, safer nursing homes and other settings. And we could do it in a matter of weeks, if we want to." By the way, a good barometer for what this go-back-to-school horse shit's going to result in can be found in Israel. Israel had done a passing fair job of responding to the pandemic. And then they got a bad case of the gotta-go-back-to-schools. So they reopened schools in May and immediately caught fire. And now Israeli parents are furious, you know, and grieving. Andy Slavitt said, "Take New Zealand with its fancy curve and life back to normal. Why can't we?" Not fair, you say. It's an isolated nation. It's an island nation. Okay, what about Germany? Not an island nation, large, growing diversity, flattened curve. Don't like that comparison? What about countries that have been in big trouble? Here's Italy, France, and Spain, countries that had it reasonably bad the same time we did. Flattened curves. In fact, pick virtually any country you want. Liechtenstein, flattened curve. Lithuania, flattened curve. Monaco, flattened curve. On and on and on. Thailand, flattened curve. Taiwan, flattened curve. And continues, "But don't tell me the U.S. can't take action if we want to, and we can't face the families of 150,000 people who didn't have to die and tell them this had to happen. And I think it's why our national political leaders won't go near these families in the grieving process. The good news, and it's good news, is we're always 4 to 6 weeks away from being able to do what countries around the world have done. Let's say we threw the kitchen sink at COVID-19 in the U.S. Let's say we started now with the goal of being open for business in October, meaning schools, in-person voting, sports, everything. If we did everything, what would happen?" And then he goes on and defines what throwing the kitchen sink means. "Start with universal mask wearing. We didn't do this in March to April, and let's chalk it up to faulty instructions, but we know better now. 2, keep the bars and restaurants and churches and transit closed, all hotspots. Prohibit interstate travel. Prohibit travel into the country. No one will let us into their country, so that shouldn't be difficult. Have hotels set up to allow people with symptoms to isolate from their families at no cost. Instead of 50% lockdown, which is what we did in March and April, let's say it's a 90% lockdown, meaning most of the Americans who couldn't stay home in April because they were picking crops or driving trucks or working in healthcare would stay home with us. That means the economy would take a several-week hit, and we would need extended unemployment insurance. It would be a tough few weeks, but we could still do things, be outside, enjoy nature, gather safely with friends. Our grandparents who lived through a decade, and see, he's touching on something I've been hammering on for months, too. Our grandparents who lived through a decade-long depression, a 6-year world war, or whatever hardship they faced in their country, would tell us we would make it. So doing all that, what would happen? At first, absolutely nothing. Cases would still grow from the prior weeks in the incubation period. Hospitals would still be full. We would still see people die. The COVID truthers would have a field day tweeting every day the same routine. America's become a fascist government. We need to liberate. We've been doing this and nothing's happening. More people are dying from non-COVID than COVID. But if someone took Trump's phone, it would help. By the way, welcome to all the new people who suddenly care so much about public education, mental health, and access to care. While this is the first time you may have ever uttered these concerns, your passion and commitment to funding them once and for all is appreciated. And here's the upshot. After a few weeks, what would happen is what happened in other countries. In many countries, the R number dropped to 0.3. Let's say in the U.S. it dropped to 0.5. If you have 60,000 cases in your community in 50 days, it would drop to 58. Pay attention to that. If we could drop the R number to 0.5, if you have 60,000 cases in your community in 50 days, it would drop to 58. 6,000 becomes 6. 600 becomes 1. Here in my county, if we drop the R number to 0.5, our 127 cases would drop to none, or one. We can do it, but we have to have the will to do it. And perhaps more importantly, the intelligence to do it. And we are sorely lacking in that precious commodity. Silent R. Lamar says, my bad, just saying forgive me, maybe Trump's a woman trapped in a man's body. This is why he hates women, because he can't act like one. Oh, I don't even want to think about that. Because if that was the case, the woman would be just as awful, too. Ugh. Bob Elbert asks in Rhode Island, how do you think Trump would react if Pence caught COVID-19? I think he would drop Mike Pencilneck Geek like a hot rock, and then name Nimrata Haley as his running mate. Oh, going back to the whole Tom head full of cotton thing, Todd in South Carolina stands, is 1619 racially divisive? Do these people project on every single level of life? Yes. What does he understand about American history? Nothing. But somebody let him into Harvard. So that means him smart. Right? Jeremy in Vermont says, isn't it deadly clear at this point our plan is to just let COVID burn until it naturally hits herd-level recovery or treatment? But hey, some old people and kids may have to die. But Merca, God bless the USA. Yeah, something like that. Sorry, I had to take care of a couple of things there. David in South Carolina stands, says, Noel Kasler says the same about DT having feminine attributes as he regularly wears ladies' watches, makeup, and hair. See DT and Rudy on YouTube. And yes, again, once again, proving that I can be taught and I can learn, and so can David in South Carolina stand, that is not Rudy in drag. That's a guy in a dress. Thank you, Matt. Thank you, bunches. The White Sox manager, Rick Renteria, is not with the team, pending COVID tests. Steve in New York asking, is the snowball rolling down the hill? I think so. because, well, if the Marlins have been spiked with it, then doesn't that mean that the Phillies have to quarantine and be all tested too? Did either of those, just out of curiosity, did either of the two games played between the Marlins and the Phils go into extra innings? Inquiring minds, right? All right, so with $54 to go to finish last week, and hopefully getting a start on this week, let's run over and check in with Todd, or no, not Todd, I'm sorry, Scott. Yo, Scott.
Hello, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I'm fine. I feel musical today, Bob. You inspired me.
Oh, no. We're not going to sing. There'll be no singing.
I've got a long-distance dedication.
Yes?
To the old massa himself, Tom Cotton of Arkansas. Tom Lair's immortal work, I Want to Go Back to Dixie. Take me back to dear old Dixie. That's the only little old place for little old me. Old Tom's there, not forgotten, whopping slaves and selling cotton and waiting for the Robert E. Lee. But I digress. It's no wonder that I'm not a well human being, Bob.
It's entirely my fault.
The long table of conversational delectables that you have laid out in the first 2 hours of the program, why, it would make a dead man come.
Bet you got a hankering for chess pie, too, don't you?
Well, and I want to march proudly up to Mr. Trump and see if it's true, son, that he's got hot and cold running tang coming out of each nipple. My.
Oh, now you're – okay, so we cross into the third hour, and you immediately go after dinner in the Mountain Time Zone.
Yeah, well, why not? Why not? Life's short. You got to – fun is where you find it. Anyway, how you doing? Are you okay? Is everything tickety-boo?
It's as tickety as boo can boo. It was a nice weekend.
That's good.
And
– You're a Three Stooges fan, aren't you?
Oh, yes.
Did you enjoy this whole Trump thing thus far in the scenario reminds me they were either plumbers or exterminators sent to the posh, elegant abode of Mrs. Gwendolyn Lavender Snatch or whatever the hell her name was to either fix the pipes or get rid of the pests, the bugs and stuff. But what else did we expect, putting this tangerine-tinted, demented, delusional, inept fool, tub of toe cheese in chief, in charge of anything? I wouldn't let him run as a second assistant manager at an all-night cut-rate pharmacy. I mean, Jesus. What the hell were these people thinking?
I wouldn't let him empty the trash cans in a brothel.
It defies everything I know to be true about decency, and even a modicum of intelligence. I mean, it just. And I forget who wrote in to ask. But yes, we've got to get together during a non-show time period and capture for the ages ahead a permanent audio copy of "We're All Screwed, Bob."
I think it's an absolute necessity.
And statues. Earlier you were talking about statues. The only goddamn statue that I'll give you any regard for at all. Back in March, they had to cancel the unveiling in Hollywood of the statue that stood for decades in front of the building that once housed the Jay Ward Studios, the purveyors of Rocky and Bullwinkle cartoons and fractured fairy tales and the like. And back in March, because of the COVID outbreak, they had to cancel the goddamn unveiling. They had moved it to a new permanent place. They were going to have a big ceremony out the window. So I don't know. It's pending, I guess, to be determined. That's the only statue that has any significance to me at this point. Hey, Rocky, you know?
Yeah.
And it's his little pal. I noticed
Rocky and Bullwinkle got work recently. They've shown up in a Geico ad.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
God, those are great ads. And you would think that it's a big Madison Avenue ad agency that does those.
Right.
It's a little shop in Richmond, Virginia, I believe. Just a little, you know, small ad agency. See, that's where the creative stuff happens. I mean, the really good stuff. But anyway, yeah, so they're in a...
And by the way, that was Jeremy in Vermont who wanted the recording.
Okay, let me give a tip of the old rabbit ears to Jeremy in Vermont. Vermont. Wasn't that Calvin Coolidge's home state?
Was it? Yeah, maybe.
I believe so. Maybe he was the governor of Vermont, or... I don't know.
Now I have to look up Calvin Coolidge.
My head is so full of stuff, it comes dripping out of my ears, Bob. I'm telling
Born
you.
Born in Vermont, but he made his mark in Massachusetts politics.
Oh. Now, see, I didn't know that.
Becoming governor of Massachusetts.
Well, I knew he was a governor somewhere, Bob. I just didn't know where. I didn't know. But anyway, 99 days, people. I got a thing from the whoever's in charge of voter registration reminding us to double check our registration. And I think that's a wise thing for everybody within the sound of my voice who's a voter in the U.S. of A. to do in the next couple of days. Call down there or go to their website and double check that your name is on the voting rolls, because there are various cutoff dates for assuring that in the various states. We cannot lose our grip and drop the ball in this upcoming game. This is the big game, Bob. This is the big show. 99 days, people. We've got to get. And take people with you if you're voting in person somewhere, and encourage everybody you know, if they're not registered, to get registered. If they are registered, to double check that they are. That we just cannot be caught napping for a single moment on November 3rd. We just cannot do it.
I'm glad you reminded me. I'll make that call in the morning.
Okay. Well, I live to serve. You know that.
I think it's best practice, due diligence.
And they don't want us. They're trying. You think their efforts to suppress and discourage voting have been, you know, going full tilt boogie up till now? They haven't begun to rat fuck us. You know, and I know that our side is better. We've got the better ideas. We've got the better policies. We've got the better caliber of human beings. But we've got to anticipate and outmaneuver them and outthink them at every fucking turn. It's like having a demented two-year-old, you know, in a shitty diaper running rampant and riot in one's home. If you're a responsible grown-up, you simply cannot allow that bullshit to happen.
Well, I think you're right. And as I just saw it come through. Yeah, as Randy in PA put it, if you have to take extraordinary measures in order to vote, then the vote is invalid.
Yeah. Or if it's not invalid, it certainly is a leading indicator to remind us how important it is and how scared they are. I don't know if that was sad news about Lindsey Graham being up 2 points, but we're 99 days out. Anything can happen. And hopefully it'll happen to them and not us. You know?
Indeed. Indeed.
So I don't know. Go ahead. I've filibustered.
Well, no, I was going to. Lee in New York said, I saw June Foray at a convention. She was cued with, "Watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat." And she did not miss a beat in replying, "That trick never works." Again.
Somewhere, I think it's on YouTube, but if not, you'd have to Google around for it. Somewhere there is like a 30-minute audio of a recording session for a Rocky and Bullwinkle episode, outtakes and all. So who would you have there? You would have June Foray as Rocky. You would have Paul Frees, I believe, as Boris Badenoff. You would have June Foray as Natasha. You would have Bill Scott, Jay Ward's partner, as Bullwinkle. And it's not a visual thing. It's all audio. And it's just a typical research. Those people had great fun. People don't know the fun that radio and TV and voice artists have when they're creating the final product. What is piped into your home is not necessarily what happened at the recording session. I'm sure you were. Hell, you know.
Well, I'm just now we're off down the trivia rabbit hole. June Foray lived to be 100.
She did.
She only passed away 3 years ago.
Yeah.
3 years ago yesterday. So
that doesn't.
How odd
amazing.
That the goddess of irony calls her to mind. And yeah. I knew she was Natasha, and I knew she was Rocky. I did not know she was Cindy Lou Who. And I did not know she was Witch Hazel in the Warner Brothers cartoons.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, but aren't they all deep down inside?
Pardon me?
Yeah, I know, but aren't they all deep down inside? Bugs Bunny.
She had a long career. Well, I somewhere around here, I've got one of if not the last interview with Mel Blanc that I did less than a year before he died, a radio interview I did. I've got to get that digitized. Well, first I've got to find a machine to play it.
Oh, I'd love to hear that.
Yeah.
Chuck Jones, and I'm just looking at her bio, is quoted, "June Foray is not the female Mel Blanc. Mel Blanc was the male June Foray."
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Mel Blanc had a long, long career.
Yeah, his was. Significantly impacted by a badass car wreck.
Yeah. Did you ever read the story of how they brought him back from the coma?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, all right, well, we won't go down that road. People can look it up. But he details it in his autobiography, and that's not all, folks. That was written probably in the mid-'80s, 86, something like that.
And, by the way, as Jeremy reminds us, Olivia de Havilland yesterday.
Yeah. I had forgotten she was still around. She was like 104, Bob.
Yeah, she was.
And who was it also who died recently? The first thing I look at when I fire up the old internet machine is I've always read the obituaries. And I post them, some of them, on my Facebook because people need to have an appreciation for, you know, the lives and work of people, especially if they've had an impact, you know, on you or your family personally. I mean, not personally one-on-one, but personally in the sense that you're an enhanced human being because of their presence on the planet. And that's the thing, you can't say that about Trump. I don't know anyone who is genuinely enhanced. How old is he now? 74, something like that?
Yeah.
What will be chiseled in stone once he has gone on to whatever his reward is? And God,
the other one was Regis Philbin.
Oh, Regis, yes.
God, thank you, Randy. God. Now,
thank you. There's another fellow who's seen it all and done it all.
And so, while with the passing of Representative John Lewis, it was crickets from Nitwit Nero's Twitter account.
Oh, I'm sure.
He tweeted a lavish praise of Regis Philbin and somehow managed to still make it about himself because malignant narcissist.
You know, Reg and I are friends.
He was one of the first to tell me I should run for president.
I doubt that. I don't know his politics, but Jesus. Ay, 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 Bob.
I know.
I was watching a thing on, you have Netflix, right?
Yes.
There's a new documentary series. It's only like three parts, so you could probably watch it all in one long sitting. Probably take an ice cream break or something, you know, about midway through. But it's called Fear City. It's about New York in the 70s and organized crime. And who would you think is a talking head in a documentary on that topic? Who would you, just in your wildest dreams, who would you imagine would be one of the many talking heads in that documentary?
Oh, I got no clue.
I'll give you a hint. Former mayor of New York, Powell and
Rudy?
Mayor of
Rudy Giuliani. Yes.
But I got to thinking, some of the suspicions that have come out about him of late, long after he was a federal attorney and mayor of New York. One of the key points of the documentary has to do with the concrete business in the New York area and the mob influence and how all the buildings are made from poured concrete. And there's skimming all over the place of that money, inflated bids. And we'll watch it and tell me. But I got to thinking, listening to him talk, sanctimonious putz, you know, he had to have been up to something. And who better than a fucking lawyer to do your real down and dirty, nasty work? And if Trump is or was a client of Rudy's, I mean, I think there's more to be learned, is what I'm saying. I can't prove it, but I strongly suspect that he's not the clean person he would like you to think that he is or was. I never liked him. That bullshit stuff on 9/11 and, you know.
Oh, no. He was, yeah, no.
I always felt, you know, queasy and sleazy after, you know, being exposed to him in any way, because he didn't. And they asked him in the interview, one of the interview segments, if it had gone another way for you, could you imagine yourself being on the other side? Because he's Italian. I don't mean to generalize, but a good number of the made people, I mean, to be made, you have to have, you know, charts and graphs showing your heritage, your Italian heritage and stuff.
Pedigree.
Pedigree, yes. And I'm not going to say how he answered. You can look that up yourself and watch it. Fear City on Netflix. But, you know, and you're right about, you know, having our work cut out for us. And you were saying it's not going to happen in a term or two of a president. It's not going to happen in a generation, in our lifetimes, in the first 100 days, in the first 1,000 days, et cetera, et cetera. I thought back immediately to John F. Kennedy's inaugural address in January of 1961. That's on YouTube also, and I encourage people, for whatever flaws John F. Kennedy might have had, listen to that inaugural address. Take, if you weren't around in those days, try to imagine yourself in your mind's eye what America and the world was like, and then imagine an articulate, capable, able person in the Oval Office. And you'll weep real tears when you do a side-by-side comparison, because he uses that exact verbiage in his inaugural address. You know, these things may not happen in the first 100 days or the first 1,000 days or in my lifetime or in the lifetime of this generation, but let us begin. God damn it. Where is that attitude to do decent, worthwhile, beneficial stuff, Bob? And I don't mean to beat up Joe Biden. I mean, if that is who the party wants to be the nominee, I guess in the final analysis, on some level, he's better than Trump.
But what I fail to wrap my mind around, Scott, is this ongoing drama of a vice presidential choice.
Yes.
Why in the hell not have a nominee out there loaded for bear and doing some of the heavy lifting of blasting the bejesus out of Donald Trump? Maybe that marks me as a simpleton. Maybe this all just makes perfect sense to the real geniuses of American politics, but I don't get it.
Well, and you know, you think back to Spiro Agnew, what his job was, and we've had other vice presidents whose job it was to be the pit bull. Okay. Yeah, certainly there's, and yes, you're right, there's too fucking much drama. And it might have fit in an ordinary year when there wasn't a fucking pandemic and people dropping like flies. The fucking odometer of death is making my head hurt. It's spinning so fast, you know?
And well, what do you think of that stuff that I was sharing a little bit ago? The idea of finally getting serious, really shutting down, doing what's necessary, stopping this goddamn thing, making sure everybody's got the money to get them through. Or do we just want... And this is a hard question. Do we just let him keep on fucking up until he fucks himself out of office? Or is that even possible? I mean, the idea of an October surprise vaccine, and again, I find myself at odds with myself, Scott, because on the one hand, if a vaccine can be had, God knows I'm all for it. But would you trust anything backed by this gang of foot pads and cut purses and highwaymen and sneak thieves and throat cutters and lick spittles and lackeys and boot licks and would you?
Could you repeat the question?
No.
In a word, my answer to that long question is no. Or if I use a two-word answer, fuck no. Okay? No. I mean, it's as have you ever seen a snail after a rainfall go across your sidewalk and look closely at the trail of slime on the sidewalk after the snail has passed? the horrible shitstorm and consequences that are yet to befall us in the wake of this. It's like the devil's motorboat, and we've got crap up to our chin in hell. You remember that joke?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I forget the punchline either. You know, wait till the devil comes through on his speedboat, or all right, lunch is over, back on your head. So I forget. It could be both. I don't know. But it's like we are so thoroughly screwed if this man gets another 4 minutes, much less another 4 years. No, I don't believe a word they say. And you're right about the fucking vaccine. I would love to see a vaccine, provided it's thoroughly tested and viable, and it doesn't cause you to grow a nose out of your left hip, you know, as one of the side effects. It's almost overwhelming, and that shit doesn't happen automatically. Things are designed to be the way that they are, aren't they? Isn't part of the exercise to make us just throw up our hands and say, fuck it. Take this medicine. Fuck it all. Take 2 tablets every 4 hours.
Take 2 Lysols and call me in the morning.
Yeah, or shove a black light up your butt. You know, the fucking inmates have taken over the asylum. And I mean no disrespect to people who are challenged, you know, emotionally or intellectually. You know, when I say the inmates are taking over the asylum, I mean the batshit, wing-ding, you know, crazy people. I mean, absolute stark raving. No, they won't even communicate with reality via rumor. They won't go back to reality even as a tourist.
Right, and and David in South Carolina, Stan, points out, no way a vaccine can go through all the needed testing and trials by October. So if they release one, it would not be safe. Plus, vaccines don't raise the dead. However,
yeah,
Trump will promise one.
Yeah. So, no, I don't, you know, I don't trust anything that they say. The man fiddle-fucked his way, fiddle-fucked his time and resources and opportunities away for the first, what, January, February, March, April, May, June. I mean, he didn't wear a mask until he visited the Ford factory a month and a half ago, where they're making respirators or something. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be so wound up and scattershot here, but
and this is what And I don't mean this as an insult. You are not atypical.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, we're all in the same stew here. That's why it's imperative that we put a stick into the spokes here. And for Christ's sake, believe me, I know about protesting, and I know about freedom of speech and freedom of assembly and verbalizing articulating the popular rage. I know all that. I've done all that, okay? But for Christ's sake, whoever is in charge of some of these activities that are getting out of hand, or worse yet, being used by the forces of evil on the Trump side to make people believe that things are out of hand or uncontrollable or whatever, please, you know, channel your energies in a more appropriate way. Don't give them sticks to beat us with. Am I off base in saying that, Bob? Because I don't think
no, but put some meat on those bones.
Well, if the object of the exercise is chaos on the part of the Trump misadministration, And if the object of the exercise is to divide us amidst seeming or actual chaos, then don't give them weapons with which to beat us. You know? God knows there's plenty of things to do, because they'll take even a quiet public demonstration and try to make it into something that it isn't. Hell, we saw that on the walk across Pennsylvania Avenue to hold up the Bible, which I'll say to my dying death was a goddamn vintage Richard Nixon trick Bible with fucking blank pages in front of St. John's Church. And I don't know why. Maybe there is no God after all. But lightning, if there was ever a moment for a bolt of lightning to come out of the blue.
Well, you get a cowbell for Richard Nixon trick Bible.
Yeah, well. Yeah, I mean, about two times Nixon was sworn in by the trick Bible.
You mean because it didn't catch fire?
Well, it didn't have anything on the pages. All the pages were blank. You can swear to anything you want on a blank page Bible, Bob. Don't you know? Anyway, I just this is what I get for, and where I've been, by the way, you didn't ask me, but where I've been is I've instituted the summer sleeping schedule where I stay up later than usual and sleep later than usual. And I get up and the first hour of the show is gone and I hesitate to call in because I don't want to talk about something that I missed or whatever. But
well, that's considerate of you.
Well, yeah, I like to have my little ducks in a row, as it were, Bob. And the Moran Monday, you talk about the winning the iguana. The game that I always wanted to win when I would go down to Marshall Hall Amusement Park with my great-great aunt Emma, she'd be sitting in Happy Land plunging nickels into the 5-cent slots, and she'd give me like $5, which in the early 60s to a child was all the fucking money in the world. And my game of choice was that one where it's like the blocks of wood, like marching soldiers, sort of on a slant, and you're behind the counter on the customer side of the counter, and you get three rings, wooden rings, for a dime, and you try to toss the ring and get it not only to go over the prize, but go down completely to the base of the block. Do you know the game I'm talking about?
I do.
And I wanted to win what looked like the finest gold wristwatch that's ever been put together by Swiss technology, although at a carnival game at an amusement park, I don't think it was real gold, and I doubt that the closest that watch ever got to Switzerland was somebody waved a Hershey bar over it or something, you know, during lunch break, the Hershey bar in the guy's pocket. This was not Swiss watchmaking technology. But I don't know how many dimes I pissed away trying to win that damn watch. I don't know where I was going with that. Oh, the opening to the Moran Monday. Or the game where you throw a coin and try to get it to land on a plate. A plate, I might add, that's got a thin veneer of Vaseline on it. So those fucking dimes, you know, you get the trajectory just right, and those dimes would be off. They'd bump into Telstar in a stationary a geosynchronous orbit over the Earth. You know, those dimes ain't staying on that plate. A lot of things are going to happen at the carnival tonight, boys and girls, but that ain't one of them. You know what I mean? I just stop me, Bob. God damn, stop me. I'm free of.
No, well, that's like. Off. In the Moran Monday babble, I've got the reference to throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls in the vain hope of taking home not even a little bit adorable iguana.
Yeah.
Well, that's real. and it comes from family history. God, it was eons ago, and we went to the West Virginia State Fair.
Uh-oh.
And there they were, the goldfish bowls, the ping pong balls, and a little climbing tree with dozens of baby iguanas on them. And Agnes wanted to. And I said, but what? I said, one, it's never going to happen. And two, what in God's name do we want with a baby iguana? And I said, okay, sure, go ahead. Let me watch. First try. Blink. Right in the goldfish bowl.
You won the iguana?
Agnes did.
That's great.
And I looked at only you. And so for the rest of that hot, blistering, sweltering, air you can wear August afternoon and into the evening, we tramped around the West Virginia State Fairgrounds with our brand new baby iguana.
How did you transport it? Did they have a carrier?
Yeah, they give you a little plastic cage.
Oh, how big are they? How big is a baby iguana?
Tip to tail, maybe 5 inches.
Okay, so you couldn't carry it in one of those Chinese carry-out food containers.
No, it was a little plastic cage with a ventilated top and a handle.
Yeah. What did you name it, Bob?
I think it was Iggy.
Iggy. The brain trust worked overtime to come up with Iggy the iguana, Bob. I don't mean to. Never mind.
You don't waste a lot of time naming an iguana, Scott.
Yes. Here, Iggy. Iggy.
Iggy ate romaine lettuce.
Of course.
And Agnes swore that he hated her.
Iggy hated Agnes. Now, I just can't imagine that. How does an iguana, named Iggy or otherwise, express hatred or disdain or anything? They're kind of...
Claws and teeth, Scott. Claws and teeth.
Oh. I was going to say their brains are reptilian, but duh, it's a fucking reptile. Okay, so that makes sense. Now, was this a shape-shifting?
Yeah, it shape-shifted right out of our house.
Oh, it did? Okay. No, because I think back to there's a British guy, David Icke, I think his name was, that his theory of reality was everybody in charge of anything important is a shape-shifting alien.
Well, and in point of fact, as Agnes just hollered through the wall here, she gave it to her ex-husband.
That's delightful. I wish I'd had an iguana back when I needed one for that purpose, because I can think of two exes, or at least one.
Yeah, and it carried... I just muted the mic to check in with her. I think she got rid of it after she read that the doctor told her that iguanas carried E. coli.
Oh, yeah. Well, that makes sense.
And so she thought that she couldn't think of a better gift for her ex-husband.
Did you get busy with your beadwork and make it a little rhinestone collar so you could attach the little iguana leash to take Iggy for a walk, Bob? Did you do that?
No. And in point of fact, what we were told is that when you get an iguana a bigger terrarium, it will grow bigger, and it will keep up with the size of the terrarium.
Yeah. You know, thinking back to pet accessories that were a total waste of money in my regard. You remember Punky the Cockatiel, right?
Yeah.
That little bastard lived 20 years, okay? So he was a constant presence for some time. And at some point, I thought it would be a nifty idea to get a little ladder, a little plastic ladder, and prop it up against the side, one of the sides of the cage, so that after he went down to drink or eat, he could climb up the ladder. Well, a birdcage has got bars that, you know, not diagonal, but horizontal bars on all four sides. And he, if he's down there getting a drink or having a bite, he can easily climb up the bars. There's no need. A ladder is redundant, okay? But I went out to the old pet shop and said, give me one of them pretty ladders for my bird. He never, he was afraid of it for the first 6 weeks because he didn't like anything new introduced to his little universe. He was like a Republican in that regard, Bob. He didn't like anything new or real brought into his tiny little world, okay? And all the time that I had him and that fucking ladder, he never, in my sight, used that thing for anything other than a target for shitting. Okay, there goes dinner in the West Coast. So, anyway. But my God, I never had an iguana.
Well,
I did have a lizard.
Fancy sciencey talk. They are carriers of diarrheagenic E. coli. And Salmonella osis.
Fuck.
And so away went the iguana. And they can transmit it through their little claws if they scratch your skin.
Oh, sure.
By the way, Jeremy wrote in. Jeremy wrote in just a minute ago. Wait a goddamn minute. Are you slyly saying that on that a hot August day you carried Agnes's purse and her new baby iguana? Turn in that man card! And now it's turning into the credits, the reptilian version of the credits to Monty Python and the Holy Grail. You know, my cousin was bitten by a moose. Steve in New York, who says, tell Scott I'm very glad to hear his voice, said, I had an iguana. They're delicious.
Ooh.
Well, and that's that the way life imitates art. Way, way back in the 80s, there was a band called Wall of Voodoo, and they had a one-hit wonder with a song called Mexican Radio, which contained the lyric, I wish I was in Tijuana. Eating barbecued iguana. And some 20 years later, along comes an episode of Tony Bourdain's A Cook's Tour, which was his first TV show on Food Network.
Yeah.
Where he traveled to Oaxaca in Mexico and ate iguana enchiladas.
Oh, my.
And said, oh, that was awful. Terrible. And this line has just stayed with me because it was so perfectly Bourdain. I wanted to dip my head in a bucket of lye and walk screaming off a cliff. Walk. So.
Well, I've got a big cookbook. It's like The Joy of Cooking. It's like 4 inches thick. I've got to check in there and see if there's a recipe for cream chipped iguana on toast points for supper tonight here at Shea Guru.
Well, I mean, you've got iguanas in San Diego.
Oh, I'm sure we do. Yeah. Yeah. Well, there, I saw a lizard out here one day. I was getting ready to feed the squirrels their little complement of nuts, and a lizard scurried by the door. I'm surprised one hasn't come in here. Or a snake. We've got snakes. I would just shit. I mean, I'm not afraid of creatures for the most part. But they say, well, you know, I forget whether it's the round or the pointed nose ones that you have to beware of. Who's going to get that fucking close to look at the shape of a snake's nose, Bob? Well, not me, certainly.
Let's not talk about snakes.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, you got to remember, one passed through here, and
yeah, how did that ever resolve?
It didn't. Well, I just kind of tried to come to terms with the fact that as long and I rationalized that the snake wanted to get away from me, and I wanted to get away from the snake. So maybe we understand each other.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'd forgotten about the snake. Anyway, well, never mind the recipe. I'll have to go back to another my backup plan, because first you have to get an iguana, and
the great radio comic team Bob and Tom. You ever hear their show?
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah, out of Indianapolis.
Tom's, I remember listening and him saying, I'm going to give you my fantastic Armenian chicken recipe, because Tom's Armenian.
All right.
And he said, first steal a chicken. So, let me see if I can fade this up in the right spot. No, we're still in the chorus there.
I remember that song. What was the name of the group?
Wall of Voodoo.
I wish I was in Tijuana, eating barbecued iguana. I take requests on the telephone. I'm on a wavelength far from home.
See, I told you, it's there. Yeah.
God.
Oh, and something else that just popped through my mind. I saw the story over the weekend, Scott, of the Nazis who wore their Nazi flag masks to Walmart or whatever in Minnesota over the weekend.
Oh God.
I mean, it's a real thing that happened.
Did they match the shirts? Were they like brown shirt masks?
They were red Nazi masks, and they were accosted. And I've got the audio here. Stand by.
All right. I will.
You're sick. Yeah, you're sick. You have an illness. You can't be American and wear that mask.
A man and a woman wearing Nazi flags as masks, and she raises two middle fingers to the guy who's telling her she's sick.
You cannot. We literally had a war about this.
I kill Nazis. My grandfather.
You're wearing a swastika.
If you vote for Biden, you're going to be in Nazi Germany. That's what it's
going to
be like.
Yeah, because there's a masking requirement. We're going to be living in Nazi Germany because that's what it's like. They're anti-maskers, and they're making their displeasure known by way. But the thing is, the problem here, where do you just get a Nazi flag? Because suddenly you need one to protest the government tyranny.
Well, there's Nazi flags R Us, Bob.
Yeah, but all kidding aside, I mean, you've got to make some effort. So there was a conversation, because it's a man and a woman, you know, spouses or, you know, friends with benefits or whatever the fuck they are. And they just happen to know where to go. I wouldn't begin to know where to get a Nazi flag. A little tiny Nazi flag that you could use as a face mask. But they knew. They knew.
This is in Minnesota?
Yeah, Minnesota.
Whereabouts, or do you know?
Marshall, Minnesota.
Never heard of it. Well, there's probably an outpost somewhere, or a friend of a friend knows a guy. Because, see, that's the other thing, Bob. That's the other thing. What we see in on the news is the proverbial tip of the iceberg in terms of right-wing wackaloons and assorted crazies, okay? What we see in public, that's just the tip of the iceberg. You know they are fucking out there. You know it as well as your own name, okay? They are out there, and they dwell among us. No matter where you are, you're within a couple of miles, shit, maybe a couple of feet, a couple of yards anyway, of people who are not all together together, if you get my meaning. And you know that they are waiting with bated breath for the election. See, it's 99 days for them, too. And they will take their marching orders from the demented fool-in-chief. You know, on some level, I think he wants to lose, you know? Because, first of all, the pressure is literally killing him.
No.
Really?
No. Because, among other things, he knows he has to remain president in order to potentially stay out of prison. The other thing, though, is having seen that video of the two Nazis in Marshall, Minnesota, I was reminded of an old song by Chumbawamba.
Oh, God. You're taking us way back.
Called
DJ Bob.
Called The Nazi. Or The Day the Nazi Died. And the song is actually about the last Nazi to die in Spandau prison.
That was Rudolf Hess, wasn't it?
Yes. And so so Chumbawamba came up with a song about it, but I went and listened to it after seeing the video from out of Minnesota, and I realized that, you know, we use a certain term here to describe the Trump devotees. And that term is maggots. M-A-G-A-T-S. I think I was among the first to use the term.
I believe so.
And so check out this lyric.
Der nächste ist auch ein Antifaschismuslied. Wir sind immer noch ein Antifaschismusband.
Singing it in, and she's, they're singing it in Germany.
The war, the Nazis vanished without a trace, but battalions of fascists still dream of a master race. The history books, they tell of their defeat in 45. They all came out of the woodwork on the day the Nazi died.
They say the prisoner of Spandau was a symbol of defeat. Whilst Hess remained in prison, then the fascists, they were beat.
So the promise of an Aryan world would never materialize. So why did they all come out of the woodwork on the day the Nazi died? The world is riddled with maggots. The maggots are getting fat. They're making a tasty meal of all the bosses and bureaucrats.
They're taking over the boardrooms and they're fat and full of pride.
And they all came out of the woodwork on the day the Nazi died. So if you meet with these historians, I'll tell you what to say. Tell them that the Nazis never really went away. They're out there burning houses down and peddling racist lies. And we'll never rest again until every Nazi dies.
That's great.
Did you did you notice the reference to maggots and Nazis?
Oh, yeah.
That's not a song. Yeah. That's a prophecy.
Yeah.
from years back.
Oh, yeah. God, they were popular in, what, the late 80s, early 90s?
Yeah, and up into the, they had, and then, you know, what, Tub Thumping came along mid to late 90s?
Yeah, I get knocked down, but I get up again.
Yeah.
I love that song. But don't play it, because I will never, I don't have Q-tips to get those little musical notes out of each ear.
No, that would, we probably already earwormed people.
Yeah, well, by the way, speaking of far-fetched notions, and I know we're right at the cutting off point of the show, but tomorrow night on your local PBS station, Frontline has got an episode which I think may be of interest to this group. You think? The United States of Conspiracy. How trafficking in conspiracy theories went from fringes of U.S. politics into the White House. Frontline examines the alliance of conspiracy entrepreneur Alex Jones, Trump advisor Roger Stone, and the president, and their role in the battle over truth and lies. I think the battle is actually for reality-based ideas and notions. But never mind, I didn't write the blurb. But anyway, it's the United States of Conspiracy tomorrow night on most of your PBS stations.
And the other thing, Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground,
yeah,
came within a gnat's ass, or a gnat's ass hair, of airing Plandemic. You know, that bullshit documentary.
Yeah.
That's John Oliver did a brilliant takedown of it a couple of weeks back. But they were going to air it, and the outcry became so great that they pulled it. But as we close the program, Scott, I'm looking at the written lyric to that Chumbawamba song. And, you know, in the lyric, it's spelled maggots, M-A-G-G-O-T-S.
Yeah.
But if you spell it with the modern spelling, M-A-G-A-T-S, Jesus, it makes sense. The world is riddled with maggots.
Yeah.
The maggots are getting fat. They're making a tasty meal of all the bosses and bureaucrats. They're taking over the boardrooms, and they're fat and full of pride. And they all came out of the woodwork on the day the Nazi died.
Yeah. Well, if you want
something, that's Trumpism to a damn T.
Yeah, that's prophecy. That's what that is. But if you want to have your hairs curled, go on YouTube and find a series of videos by a public interest lawyer by the name of Daniel Sheehan, and he lectures. He did a series of college lectures on this very idea, notion, reality, let's say, that the Nazis, after World War II, never actually went anywhere other than maybe South America, Argentina, or somewhere. Look him up, Daniel Sheehan. Jesus, I mean, and I'm fairly knowledgeable when it comes to a lot of stuff, but he was telling me shit that scared me, and I don't frighten very easily because I've been married twice and have had a brain tumor, okay, and grew up in the 60s, so it's pretty hard to put
That's halfway to a Sam Kinison rant.
Well, almost, but the thing about it is, when you tell me something like that, you know, and open my eyes to a reality that I didn't, that was hidden from me, that gets your mind a whirling, Bob.
Yeah,
but
I can dig it.
And they are there. That's where I was going with my little rant with November 3rd. You know that they've got a battle plan for what happens if and when Trump loses. And I don't think it's necessarily a foregone conclusion. I may be in the minority in that regard, but they know what's at stake. We know what's at stake from our point of view, but they know what's at stake from their point of view. And maybe on some level, he doesn't want to be president anymore, but he's stuck. He's painted himself into a goddamn corner. You know, he's got to stay in power, because the moment he's out of power, he becomes an ordinary citizen. And you know what that means in terms of legalities and indictments and trials and convictions and sentences, maybe.
Well, and just to close a couple of things out, when you said don't cue it up, I'd already gotten a note from Lee in New York, Chumbawamba. I started tub thumping when you mentioned the band Earworm Encountered. Nazi asshole Steve in New York says, I'm thinking a cast iron skillet to the head would be appropriate. I'm just concerned about denting the skillet. Well, you want to be careful with your cast ironware. Just remember, even if you've hit a Nazi in the head with one, never wash it with soap, Steve. Soap is terrible.
Yeah.
Just terrible for iron skillets. I'm trying to see. I'm looking at the woman in the video. I'm not a Nazi. I'm trying to tell people what's going to happen in America. You're wearing a swastika. If you vote for Biden, you're going to be in Nazi Germany. That's what it's going to be like. You're sick. You're literally wearing a Nazi flag right now. Yeah, because socialism is going to happen here in America.
Who was confronting them? Was it a store employee?
No, other shoppers. Other shoppers.
Yeah.
A little reminder. Ron and Raleigh a while back said, hey, Bob, perhaps you didn't know that Spiro Agnew spoke at the dedication of the Confederate monument at Stone Mountain. I did not know that. Now I do.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Holy shit. that just evil sack of sin.
Yeah.
And just in case, and Darcy reminds us, Chumbawamba also has a song called Oxymoron. It's a long-distance dedication going out to Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah.
And Ralphs,
little dog Snuggles.
and Ralphs, who put the challenge on the table that got us down to within $54 of being done with last week. Thank you, Ralphs. Iguana recipe ideas, keep food safety in mind. And there it is from the University of Florida Extension Service in Broward County. Well, let's see what the University of Florida Extension Service in Broward County suggests for yummy iguana. Iguana hominy stew. Iguana tacos and burritos. Iguana meat. Ingredients. Iguana meat cooked and cut into small pieces. That's pretty much it.
I would be afraid, Bob.
Iguana hominy stew. You're going to love this. Two medium iguanas. 5 cups of hominy. 10 cloves of garlic. Yeah, you're going to need a lot of garlic. One onion sliced, one slice of cabbage diced, 1 bay leaf, oregano to taste, cilantro to taste, salt and pepper to taste, bucket. You got to have the bucket. But, yeah, no, pass.
Is there shake and bake for iguana? I know they have it for pork and for chicken.
Well, you use the chicken.
It's not fried, Mama. It's shake and bake, and I help. Jesus. Madison Avenue, thank you. That's only about 60 years old, that slogan.
And I help. Yes.
And I help. Well, listen, it has been a multitude of pleasures, Bob, and I've been gone far too long, sleeping mostly, and I promise not to ever do it again until next time.
until next time. Right.
But check out that Netflix. That's easy for me to say. Okay, you can't buy these teeth through the mail. You've got to have them fitted in person by a real specialist, you know, a professional. But anyway, I promise not to be out of touch so much unless I just can't stand it. I mean, sometimes I bury my head in my pillow and cry myself softly to sleep.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, that's Jesus. But yeah, watch that Netflix show, Fear City, and wait for Rudy. Make sure you time it so you've got your popcorn there so you can watch Rudy.
Do I need an anti-emetic?
Maybe. Depends on your constitution, bub. But anyway,
What's all the hubbub, bub? All right, out of here, Scott.
You take care. You take care, and give my best to the family.
Yep, and all the best to Mom and them. Yep.
All right. Yeah. See you later.
Later. Our buddy Scott. And so, 11 extra minutes of the program, and thanks for joining in. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks to our all of the subscribers who make it possible for this program to exist. It wouldn't otherwise. Thanks to all of you with your a la carte contributions. We'll begin tomorrow, unless there are changes via the overnight crew. We'll begin tomorrow with a fundraising goal of $454. And hopefully knock that out some. Thanks to all of you who, as I said, who keep the program on the air. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Remember, anytime Podbean goes sideways, you can always check over at White Rose Society. That's why we got the redundancy in the podcasting. Thanks, Ben. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. Sending all our best thoughts down to our buddy John Britovo, what with Hurricane Hannah slapping the bejesus out of his county and others this weekend. John, let us know you're okay. Somebody get a message to him. Let him know that we need to know he's okay. And always, Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. We are not plateauing. The handle of the hockey stick just keeps going up. Because there are too many idiots in this country. COVID-idiots. Too many mask holes attending Christian music festivals in places like San Bernardino and Redding, California. Just too many. So stay home if you can. Stay safe. If you have to be out and about, maintain your social distance. Please wear your mask, wear your gloves. And if you see some burbling idiot in a Nazi flag mask, or just wearing a Nazi flag on their face, it's not a mask. Avoid them like the plague. Because they are. Later, y'all.